ورجعنا لكم بحلقة جديدة مع AAB بودكاست. اليوم الضيوف عندنا ضيوف شيء غير، ناس ثانيين، ناس وايد غير جايين من ساوث أفريكا، من جنوب أفريقيا، ناس يمثلون شركة سوني وهم امباسادرز، يعني مو شيء صغير، يعني أوبا الوضع كذي عندنا. بس اليوم راح نسولف أكثر ونتعرف زيادة على سيراز وفاطمة. How are you guys?
Very well, thank you.
How's everything?
Fantastic.
I know what I said at the beginning. You didn't get it. I know.
No. We got everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
We got everything.
Ah, we're gonna change this to Arabic. Looks like we're gonna change it. Now we seen classes you gave in AAB. We've seen things you did around, amazing things. But when we say, and when we announce this, we talk TTL. We talk about that. But today we want to know more about Siraz and Fatima. So can you tell us about you guys?
Should I put you in the spotlight?
I'll let the wife start so that she sets the tone.
Because wives have better memories than husbands. So it started in 2009. A friend of ours, his daughter, wanted to get married. And Siraj was always the photographer in this relationship and with everybody in our community. So they requested that Siraj take the images for the wedding, and shocked and overwhelmed because he's not a wedding photographer. He's very photojournalistic and street style photography. He went ahead with it, but it was the Muslim segment of the market, the industry. Yeah. And obviously we need a female on board as well to help with the wedding photography. And he pulled me in. I had three or four months to learn just the basics of photography. He told me, just learn the basics. Don't worry about being creative and stuff like that. We just need to give them good, clear images. And luckily, we were photographing a wedding where we were very familiar with everybody. So it was a little bit comfortable, but really nerve-wracking because it's a huge responsibility.
Yeah, it's a one shot. If you didn't take it, it's not going to happen again.
You don't want to mess up people's memories.
Exactly, and being newbies at it as well, it was a bit nerve-wracking. Returned home with over 3,000 images, and they were super thrilled. They were really excited, and I think it is built from there because we belong to a social group and community that's very tight-knit, and it's because of them and that kind of networking and word of mouth, we grew to a point where in like 2 years' time, we decided to call ourselves TTL Photography. Other than that, we were known as Siraj and Fatima Can Take the Photos.
Okay.
It was nothing formal, very impromptu. Yes, we were being paid for it. So from our side, we did take it very seriously. And then it came to a point where we decided, you know what, this is a very good way of getting some bread and butter onto the table. And the main priority as well as being young parents. We had two kids that we had to worry about school fees.
Are they photographers?
The eldest is leaning towards it. She's very artistic, and we've actually given her one of our older cameras.
Okay.
So at the moment, she's got a lot of balls up in the air that she's juggling, but we always see her coming back to photography.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's a lot like her dad, a lot like Siraz.
It's a good child.
Because a lot like you, huh?
Nice, much. Yeah, very much introverted style approach to photography. Aisha, the second one, she has the talent, but it's not for her. She places her standards a little bit higher than the rest of us.
I think Aisha, the second eldest, like Fatima said, she's got the talent, but her priorities have moved on to other things. Initially, she went through a phase where she wanted to become a videographer, a filmmaker. Those are the words. I want to make films. And she started writing scripts. She was in school. She started writing scripts, and she, her drama teacher actually told her that she should actually continue. But she, when she does something, she focuses 100% on it. And so for a while, that's what she was doing. Then she focused on business studies. So it's moved away from there.
It's being shifting.
But again, there's that underlying talent. So,
And they're still young. I think it will come to a point where they'll
until they
find some kind of comfort in it. And yeah. exactly like how Siraj uses photography,
yes.
Has a comfort as well. In his spare time, he's out and about on the street or he's by the beach experimenting with shots. Has familiar and often he does it. He's always coming out with brand new shots. So he finds comfort in that. Me, on the other hand, Netflix, popcorn, and no editing.
taking a break, huh?
Take that break.
So let's say if you guys are not photographers, so what do you guys do?
That's a really good question, actually. If we look at the photography business, this business might have been started by me, but it's Fatima's business.
Yeah.
Like she mentioned earlier, in our segment, in the Muslim segment, it's easier for a female photographer to deal with brides. And Fatima's brilliant at that, on the photography side and on the business side. So what started out as me being the main photographer now is me being the second photographer. So I have a 9-to-5 as well. So that keeps me busy as well. But I think if I look at myself, it doesn't seem to be a time when I'm not a photographer. Because even in my spare time, I enjoy, like Fatima mentioned, I enjoy going to the beach and trying new things. And in fact, one of the reasons I do that
I think the question is best if we answer for each other. Yeah. Because I see it, what you enjoy. He really can't explain it, but he's always searching for knowledge.
Yeah.
In his spare time, it's on YouTube, learning more about the skill. Or even just watching other photographers speak about their experience and stuff like that. So he finds a lot of inspiration from those kind of sources. But most of the time, if our spare time is out and about in nature, spending more time with the kids. I think it was the pandemic that really made us open our eyes when it came to family time and prioritizing our time. Before COVID, we were in a rat race. We're just chasing nothing. And then we slowed down, and now we can see how we are able to juggle our time between balancing the work life and the family life. And now we prioritize a lot more on the family life part of it. And you better be nice about my thing now.
Okay, I'm just going through what you said now so I can see if I can match that.
Refresh, change.
I need to get my story straight now. You know what I'm saying?
Let's see. Somebody's going to be sleeping on the couch.
Well, if you look at it, being wedding photographers, your weekends are taken up. So it's not your normal work hours.
Yes.
So what happens when there are free weekends? We make sure that we get the kids out. So whether it's going hiking, going to the beach, Durban, where we're from, there are a lot of little farmers markets and these things. So, and our kids enjoy that. And then there are times when you actually ask them, listen, what do you guys feel like doing? And surprisingly, sometimes they'll tell, you know, we just want to go to this bookstore. We're going to go and look for books because they love reading.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, that's how we spend our off time. And then I still slot in a little bit of my own photography outside of wedding photography. Fatima, she mentioned earlier about the Netflix, and she does do that. But I still, when I watch her sometimes... you know, it's like the saying, "Woman's work is never done," and I see it. Sorry, I see it with Fatima. Her brain is always working. So, and I'm not saying it in a bad way, but it's because she's always, again, she said that I'm always looking for knowledge. She's always thinking one step ahead of everything. So, there are times when she does switch off.
In a good way.
And you know, it's those times when, as a husband, you just leave it. You don't say anything. Those are the ways those are the ways we balance.
No pressure.
So, you mentioned that you sometimes experiment some things, other kinds of photography. So, if you go to TTL account, I can see there is a lot of focus of wedding photography. Portraits, a lot of portraits, and most of them are outdoor. Let's say if you're taking photos, you're not posting on TTL, you're not doing these. What kind of photographer? Each one of you is individual. Oof. Yeah.
Go for it.
Am I answering for him?
No,
no, for you, for you. Come, you're running away again. Running away.
We are recording this, right?
To be honest, there are times when I feel having the camera in my hand feels like work, even if it's done for leisure. And I think you see that more when I'm on the go or traveling. You will never see the camera in my hand. I'm more for this, watching first and observing. And if I'm in an area for longer than, say, 2 days, by the third day, you'll see me taking the camera out and photographing something that fascinated me. But if it's a one-time experience, I want to spend that time absorbing it in my memory, in myself. I'm not as dissolved in it as people would expect me to be. And I just feel a lot of that approach is implemented in TTL as well. Like, as gorgeous as the pictures do look on the profile or website, whatever, behind that, there's a lot of social involvement, and I love that part of it. So yeah, that's, I can't really, am I going along the
I'm going to answer for her because of what I observe. I think outside of wedding photography, and it's something that we discussed as well, Fatima, she really does enjoy portraiture.
Okay.
Not necessarily wedding portraiture.
Yeah, yeah.
But portraiture. But portraiture in a sense of not just getting someone to sit there and taking the pic, but getting to know the person and then trying to produce an image where even if you see the image for the first time, you might get to know a little bit more about the person being photographed.
Mm. It's more of a feeling than just a photo.
Exactly.
100%. Yeah, you're giving the thousand words inside the one picture.
It's more about what the silence says than actual words. I've seen her on some of the weddings. You can see in fact in most of the weddings how she really gets to know the person, and she tries to implement that in the images, so that the images don't look the same, and I think that's where she shines. Yeah. So even outside of wedding photography, that is, we discussed it. That's how I see her, and she has to agree with me because she agreed with me the last time.
No doubt about it. He does encourage me a lot that I need to do more passion projects, and do it in my spare time, and find individuals in our community that fascinates me and that I would love to. And there was a project where we found in our community, there's a lot of generations. So you have the great-grandparents right down to the great-great-grandkids. And it'll be a gorgeous portrait of all of them together, because in today's day and time, I don't think people are prioritizing that as a sentimental value, you know? We did find a build-up for that need after the pandemic, when initially people weren't prioritizing photography, and then after pandemic, they could see that the older generation started prioritizing it for the functions and events, and they just went with it, because now they understood about that loss and feeling. And just to divert the whole thing onto Siraj and how I see him, there's a gorgeous quote that I saw once, and when I read this quote, this was Siraj for me. The quote goes along these lines: watch what he captures, because it is something he's afraid of losing.
Yeah.
And if you go into Siraj's private, not private, but his off TTL platform, Novus Lux, you will find exactly who Siraj is and what he loves to pay attention to. And it, even though it might come across as being religious, but there's a lot of spirituality in it, and the individuals he captures as well, they are very close to heart. It's a very familiar and common scene, but he's always finding an image that captivates him, no matter how many hundred of those images he gets. So for me, that introverted style of shooting for me always gets me, and he's the one with the camera, always. That camera will be the second wife in our relationship. And you can see when he goes anywhere interesting, he's always fascinated with, he knows he will find something that will capture him.
She does love me.
obviously. So you said you're dealing with a lot of people and interacting with them and these things. So when you deal with a model,
professional.
Yeah, you're dealing with a model. You're dealing with a wedding, a bride, a groom, whoever you're dealing with. The photo needs to have feeling in it. That's how you're doing it. That's how everyone should do it. How do you approach them? How do you deal with them? Because now we're not talking, you're not just a photographer who is professional in photography. You are actually changing a person's behavior.
Yeah.
There is feelings, there is movement, there is... So you're not just focusing on your camera, your equipment. So you're not choosing, I have this light, I have this lens, I need to put this feeling.
Yes.
How do you deal with it?
Well, it's team effort. And it's something that we emphasize on when it comes to dealing with a client that wants to hire a professional photographer. And I make it an effort to have a meeting, even if it's 2 to 3 meetings before the shoot, to have everybody on the same page by drawing up a mood board. And a lot of that has to do with the relationship you have with the models and the subject. So we can take the client's vision and we'll implement it around ideas. So the model also has to be there. That's why they are called professional models. They need to also take themselves out of their comfort zone and put them in situations that can portray the message that the client wants to put across. And that's why they get paid big money as well. So for me, in that aspect, is definitely team effort. And it's all about listening to each other, because she's also coming with a good amount of the model is also coming with a good amount of experience. So if we can come to a very good mutual agreement that, you know what, this is what the message is going to go across, and eventually you find from experience that when you are able to accomplish this, clients just let go. And they're like, okay, these two know what they are doing.
I trust what's going to come out at the end.
I trust what's going to happen.
Yeah. And I think trust is built. A big part of that as well is the environment that you create on these shoots.
Yeah.
If you cannot create a relaxed environment, you're not going to get the images that you want.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that a few photographers, it's a skill that they don't have, or they overlook, or they don't add importance to it.
Yeah.
Is even though you are being paid to model, the way I make you feel will affect the images that we get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this doesn't mean that you need to be artificially nice to them. It's just be yourself. Break the ice. We are always joking on set whenever we are. And from there, you can gauge, okay, fine, you know what, this person might be a little bit shy. So what do we do to get this person to overcome a shyness? If it's perhaps not someone that is professional. Professional models, they're brilliant at it. But even with them, if you don't create that relaxed environment, it's not a nice environment to work in. So you can't expect them to get good images if you don't bring that attitude and create that environment.
Just to add on to that, I think if we take that step of removing that title of being a creative and just accepting the next person as being a human.
Yeah.
We've been in situations where we dealt with professional models and they've attended the shoot, even though as much as they blocked whatever was distracting them, you could see it's either they're not well, or it's something personal that happened at home. They just need 5 minutes to clear their mind. You give them that space. Understanding that human aspect of it, that you are dealing with people, is very important as well. And then when you have that consideration, and then you find, okay, you know what? This helps with referrals. Fatima and that model are excellent to work with because they'll know exactly how to make something happen or build a theme or what have you. But yeah, it's about that understanding and that compromise of when it comes to that you're dealing with humans at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah, you're dealing with feeling. You're not just taking picture of a food or a product or something like that.
Exactly.
So emotions does matter. Now,
100%.
Now, you build emotions, you build sets, you choose outdoors. I've seen that you guys love outdoors. You have a lot of...
It's less work.
Yeah, actually it's harder.
What do you say? In what way?
You guys live in South Africa. Rain is going to happen anytime. How do you deal with that? Suddenly, rain.
There's always a plan B.
Okay. It's a weather app.
Always a plan B. Whenever there's a plan, but these weather apps, I mean, sometimes you can't
follow. There is a plan B.
So one thing that is always factored in is the weather. So if the client, for example, wants an outdoor shoot, it's fine. We'll do this. This is the concept that what if it rains? Mm. Then we do plan B. Mm. So it takes a bit more planning, but if you as a photographer do that, your client then starts seeing you differently because you know what they're giving us options. Yeah. So they're already thinking ahead. If that doesn't work, we can do that.
That happened.
Yeah.
And it's that builds that relationship and that trust. And
so. Mm. So for us, it's very hard to have rain. It's not too much. It's raining now. We have, but usually we don't have it. So it's not a fact that we're like, okay, the shoot is gonna cancel because rain might happen. Yeah. Mm. So it's different. But with you guys, it's a bit more than us.
Oh yes.
Yes.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Have you done a shoot under the rain?
We've been in a situation where rain was predicted, but the couple was like, you know, we're gonna go ahead with it.
Yeah.
Because there's no way we could postpone it.
Okay.
And then. It actually wasn't rain. It was dew drops.
It was a light mist. Very, very light rain. The area that we were shooting in as well is very scenic. It's called it's not part of the Midlands, but it
feels like the countryside.
It feels like the countryside. Yeah. The rain that was there was it was like a light mist. So it actually added to the shoot.
Yeah, to the vibe.
Because it gave it an effect.
It gave it a very nice effect, yeah. And
she brought an umbrella. She brought such a nice umbrella. It was that see-through clear one.
Did you use it?
Yeah. Yep. She did, actually.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But it added like a prop to the whole shoot. So it, we went with it. I think that was also a case of, you know what? This is only going to happen once. Let's make the most of it. So what if I get wet?
Let's enjoy it.
Yeah. There was an understanding. We couldn't do everything. That we're planning. So we are here now. What can we do in the situation?
Yeah.
Let's just wing it.
Let's do it.
It turned out very well.
Okay. Very unique client. Yeah. So
now a question. If you're choosing your equipment separately, what's
prime
your
lenses?
Prime. Oh, you went directly before I asked. Before I even go asking.
Prime lenses.
Directly, she has it ready.
Are there any other lenses other than prime lenses? That's what you must do.
What's your favorite lens? Come on.
Right now, 35mm, definitely. Zoom in, ranging between the 85 and the 135. Yeah.
So you like low apertures. That's why you're going to...
And love the low apertures. At the same time, I think my love for the prime started with the 55mm Zeiss lens, the Sony 55mm Zeiss.
Okay.
Definitely. For that kind of focal length, which was kind of strange for everybody else. And they were like, the 55mm, why not 50? I'm like, 55mm, I'm just taking one step back. What difference does it make? I was able to shoot a whole wedding on the 55mm. I did everything, portraiture detail, wide angles. And because that lens pushed me to, and actually not pushed me, it forced me to get used to the focal length and also put myself in tight situations where I needed to improvise. That's when I got to know how primes work and those kind of focal lens. Now it's a 35mm I really do like. It's a little bit more versatile.
Yeah, 35 is my favorite. 35 is my favorite.
Yeah,
it's a little bit more versatile.
Yeah. I don't need to move a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
If you had asked me that question a few years ago, I would have told you it was 1635 and 835. Yeah, that 1635. Even the Mark One is I just feel it's such a brilliant lens, and that focal range for my style is really good. And then COVID hit, and after COVID, my favorite lenses are the 35, 135, and 400mm f/2.8.
135, I love this lens.
That lens is so underused, underutilized.
Yes.
It's
gives an amazing bouquet.
Mm. It's absolutely amazing. I think people are a bit intimidated in terms of the space you require something for full length. But I mean, it's...
You're shooting outdoor, you have good spaces, so...
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
You are able to use these.
Yeah.
So. And I also feel that a lot of creatives don't take observing into account.
Yeah.
When you're working at a venue, for example, and if if you're working there often enough, are you taking the time to analyze your space? Then you won't need to be thinking so hard about your gear.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same things, like simple factors. Does the venue have draping where you can bounce off flash? Is there a need for you to use strobe if the drapings are a shade or color that will complement the skin tone? You know, those kind of things do help lessen the stress about what do I pack in my bag? Because a lot of creatives, when they're starting off, they're packing everything into their bags. Mm. Yes, we all started off like that.
Overpackers.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we all started off like that. But if you're going to come to a point where, like, after 5 years, you're still packing like that, no, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you haven't actually moved forward.
Yeah, you're not moving forward. You're not thinking versatility.
Yeah, or thinking efficiency.
Yeah, efficiency. Yes, that's the word. Yeah. Efficiency. Yeah. So our choice in lenses came from experience after using all the focal lens.
Yeah.
And then we found, you know what? The 24 to 70, yes, it's for emergencies. Just in case the bride really doesn't know how big a room is for a photographer's needs. So she might just say spacious. The next thing you see, there's five other makeup artists in the room and you are cramped into a corner with her. So the 24 to 70 is a backup.
Yeah, safety.
Safety, yes. But and
I think not enough, and I say this with all due respect, not enough creatives are pushing themselves. Because we tend to fall into comfort zones.
Yes, yeah. They want to stay safe. They don't want to be creative.
I know what to do with this kit, and that is why I look in my spare time. When Fatima mentioned I like going down to the beach, the reason I like going down to the beach is I will go to the same stretch of beach often, not because I'm familiar with it, but because that's how I learn to observe things. The first time I went, I saw something that everyone sees. The more I started going, I started seeing things that I didn't see initially. And it's those small details that are actually more, for me, more important than what just everyone sees. So that same philosophy, we look at the different lenses. I can't tell you that the 70 to 200 is a good lens unless I've actually tried the lens.
Yes.
Mm.
If you come up to me and ask me, what do you think of the 400 focal length? It's good. A friend of mine uses it, and he says so. That for me, that's not a right answer. Have you used it? If you haven't used it, then tell me. And then
maybe it's good for their photography, not your photography. Exactly. Yeah. So, different styles.
Yeah. So we experiment with everything, and then from that experience, we decide, okay, fine, that's not for us. This is what we're going to use.
Mm.
And we still know how to use those other focal lengths and other lenses as well.
Mm.
So that's how we look at that.
Yeah.
That
what are your current cameras?
The A92.
And yeah. I have the A7 R Mark V.
Yeah. I get this.
I'm a little practical.
Yeah. Some people like the speed. Some people like the high quality of pixels.
Yeah.
So.
It's a personal.
I actually think that I'm going to get a bit geeky now.
Yeah.
I actually think that the
you're going my way.
That A7 R Mark V.
Okay, bye guys.
I'll see you back here. I actually think that camera, Sony hit the ball out of the park with that camera.
Yeah.
The way that image is rendered for a high megapixel sensor is absolutely amazing. You know, sometimes images tend to look a bit clinical, taken on high megapixel sensors. When I say clinical, it doesn't look like it's real. So you end up unsharpening things in post. Whereas with the A7R Mark V, you can unsharpen, but there's enough detail, but it still doesn't look like a clinical image. And that's what I like about the image quality. That's why I love that camera so much. Not that I don't like the A9s as well. I mean, those cameras are brilliant. But that's enough geeking.
With the details, Sony ambassador. So yeah.
I had to throw the plug in.
Yeah, yeah, you had to throw. So tell us, how did it happen? Sony ambassadors.
No, we didn't expect it
at
all.
Yeah, no, we didn't.
Our approach to TTL in general was a case of enjoying it, but no titles.
It wasn't something that we were actively looking
for. Yeah, looking for that.
It was, for us, it was a case of, you know, we enjoy the photography. We needed to pay school fees. So it served both purposes.
Mm. Yeah.
And then it was Fatima's mentor, one of her mentors that contacted her and told her, you know what, these people, I've given your name to someone. And at that point, we didn't think much of it.
Mm.
And
this is a rewind check. At that point, Sony moved out of South Africa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it created a lot of trust issues. And we still got the questions as, how come you're still using Sony if Sony is not in the country? And it's like, we don't have a problem with the brand at all or the camera. And there are a lot of users in South Africa that are selling their secondhand kits. And it's still really good cameras. And they're like, but what about the service, you know, cleaning of the sensor and stuff? And like, till now, we didn't need to clean the cameras.
We've throughout our business, we've only ever shot on Sony. Mm. We haven't used any other brand. And that's not a marketing plug that I'm, part of our journey. And
it was love from first sight, huh?
Well, my, you know, being nerdy.
Wait. Getting into this marriage, it was definitely competition. I knew for a fact I had to give up the Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings to the camera because Siraj needed to go take pictures. I was like, fine.
So, you know, being nerds and geeks, you know, for me, it's like being like a techie. I liked what Sony was doing, even though everyone else was laughing and so forth. But for me, it was a case of, you know, if they were bold enough to start this, and this was what they were putting out there the first time, how much better will it get? It can only get better.
Yes. Mm.
And we love the image quality. I mean, that was the one thing for me that sold me. It was just brilliant image quality. And then whatever little shortcomings people say Sony had, we just worked around that. And it helped us.
And I think also the convincing part is we growing as self-taught photographers. The next best mentor was the owner of the printing lab that we used to print our... We believe in prints. We love prints because like that way, I learned a lot about myself as a photographer. If it printed out perfectly and according to the printing lab owner's eyes, with regards to color, sharpness, I'm going the right way. His compliments every single time we printed an album was, "Your people's color is amazing." He himself is over like close to like 40 years of experience in the industry. Yeah. He himself said, you know what, from every other photographer's albums, I'm not going to mention brands and stuff, but he says our one stands out when it comes to color.
And the amazing thing is we always shoot in auto white balance. We never set custom white balance.
Yeah.
So that's how much trust we put into
so that to the camera. Kind of convinced us. And then the mentor mentioned our name when he was at one of the expos, because he heard the talks that Sony wants to come back to South Africa. And then he calls me Fats. He said, "Fats, do yourself a favor and start tagging your images, Sony Alpha, Middle East, and all the Sony profiles. Just keep on tagging and hashtagging them." And eventually it came to a point where the distributor of South Africa contacted us and said, "Listen, this is the program that's coming up." They interviewed us.
Yeah.
And wanted to know more about us and why we shoot the brand and et cetera. And next thing, we were meeting with Sony. In 2018, we became ambassadors. And I just want to put it out there that, you know, becoming an ambassador wasn't the end of it. This was now the platform. Platform to do exactly what we love doing, and that's like just sharing. Because when we entered the industry, we experienced a lack of
knowledge transfer.
We only use very nice words. support, but yeah, knowledge transfer. And there was a handful of people that helped us. So when we got this platform, it was like, okay, we're going to exploit it as much as possible. And use it just to share as much as we can, irrespective of the demographic, etc. And
it's been amazing. It's been amazing because you kind of get free rein to do and to show. The advantage, you get to showcase your work on a platform that you normally don't get to share on. And we work with an amazing team from Middle East and so forth. It's grown in South Africa amazingly
with a good team, a good selection of ambassadors in South Africa as well. And we are so supportive of each other that whenever we meet up, it's the same kind of talk about how we can make the industry healthier and grow the community. Because coming from a background, I'm Indian by nationality.
Yeah. Just to make me feel good.
I'm in this kind of background. I won't say it won't be encouraged, but it's not really seen as a profession, being a photographer. You expect you to be a doctor, lawyer, accountant, you know? So when they find out that you are first time they're hearing the term professional photographer, they're wondering to themselves, did you fail school? What happened to you?
You never went to university. Yeah, you never went to university. Your parents know about this.
Yeah. Are they okay? Are they okay?
And the industry has grown amazingly, amazingly. We're very proud of where the industry is heading, especially with our sector, the Indian sector as well.
So Sony pulled you out for all. I can see when I look at your photos, this is something. The account. He's the light guy. Yeah.
He's the light guy.
I can see there is a lot of work in it. There is choosing the set. There is choosing the lights, choosing the angles, choosing the movement. So you guys do it alone? You two?
Yeah.
There's the two of us.
Not a full team?
No.
Who does what?
Everything. I do everything.
Yeah?
She's right. Like I said, I become the second shooter.
Okay.
And she's more the creative photographer than me. I'm more street photography, so I'll stand back and watch and wait for the situation. That I can do. I can predict when something's going to happen because I've been in this situation. So Fatima can see a creative image before she lifts the camera. What I'm going to say now obviously comes over time and with experience, but all the images that you see on our page, for example, that's all taken with one light. We don't set up elaborate lights or whatever. We look at the environment that we're shooting in. And again, all credit due to Fatima, she can make snap decisions in terms of that's not working, change it like this, and it'll work. So in that way, I assist her in that sense. But those very creative shots, that's me with the one light, Fatima doing the image, and all we're doing is we're either changing the position of the bride or the model, or we're changing where the light falls on her.
I think it's also training and being conditioned to work in a environment that's rushed.
Yeah. That you can't control everything.
You can't control the wedding.
Yeah.
And you have to be spontaneous. So in those moments, I'm already reading the scene before the bride enters into the hall. I know the lighting setup. I know what my settings are going to be approximately in the camera. If I'm not on point with it, I know I'm saved in my post-production. I know what to do in my post-production. So I'm actually thinking about what it's going to look like when it's printed.
Yeah, because it's a time limit thing.
Yes.
Yeah. You can't choose whatever thing you want.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's about getting the shot. And somehow, it's a thing of you in that moment, it feels like you have 5 seconds to shoot it, but you actually have enough time to slow down and think about the shot. And you just need safe 2 shots, and that's it.
She needs speed. That's why she has
A9.
Exactly. It's making a lot of sense now. Why did she choose A9? She needs a lot of pictures really fast.
Look up there.
Makes a lot of sense now. Good choice if that's what you're going.
There's a lot of micromanaging when it comes to it. You're dealing with brides. They have insecurities. You got to think about all of that. As much as I can be a protective creative, as much as I can be like that, I have to take her into consideration in the sense that, do you have a favorite side, my dear? You know? And she'll tell me. And once I get her into that zone, then she knows I am really worried about her or take her into first preference other than just my creative style.
And I think that's where you win the trust of the bride, because you took the time to ask me. I feel very insecure about my left-hand side, so you only photograph that side, my right-hand side. So, you know, again, it's that relationship and it's that trust. And the minute they trust you, you get amazing images.
They know you're going to take the side they like, whatever they like, so they don't need to make sure they're moving this way.
Exactly.
Less worries. Yeah. So let's say if you guys are not limited with anything. No time, nothing, whatever. Mm. What is your bucket list photo that you want to do?
Wedding related or non-wedding?
Whatever.
Okay.
A bucket list photo. A photo that, let's say, if you took it, you'd say, done.
To be honest, I think we did that at Mishka's shooting.
Oh, theater. Okay. Oh. Yeah, tell me about that photo.
Okay. So it's a couple. I'm going to mention their names, Mishka and Mohammed. And I think there's another point as to why that was very special as well. We booked their post-wedding shoot in Cape Town. So it was a destination.
The couple's from Durban. And we did their wedding in Durban, but the post-shoot was booked for another city.
For Cape Town. It was a two-day shoot. So, and she had two different looks, even though the same dress, but two different looks. And we had free reign to choose whichever location we wanted to. So it was 2 days of approximately 3 hours each. We could do whatever we wanted.
Free reign
to do whatever we wanted to do. And we were spoiled for choice, to be honest. Yeah. We were really spoiled for choice. Her picture is the banner picture on my website, where it was on Signal Hill. With the backdrop of Table Mountain and Lion's Head. And it was a focus of her veil and how gorgeous her veil was flowing, even though it's a back shot of her and her husband holding her. That, for me, still stands out. And no rush. Even though the lighting was amazing, the natural light was amazing in Cape Town, everything just worked perfectly for that shoot. And it was just... And I think the sentimental part of it was Cape Town was a very big part of her life growing up.
Yeah.
So for her to do her wedding shoot in Cape Town, for her, was very sentimental. So
had a lot of feeling inside
had
it.
Had a lot of feeling.
And that again comes with communication. You know what I'm saying? It's constant back and forth. And it's not a waste of time because, you get sometimes the client will speak to you and they don't always give you all the details. And then afterwards, they'll say, hey, you know what? I remembered something and I wish we had done something like this. And so we always keep those lines of communication open, and that is a prime example of why you do that. It was an amazing show.
So she was definitely a bucket list. Definitely. They ticket.
Definitely. I think I don't have a bucket list shot.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a bucket list series.
Okay.
And I think I've kind of done what I want. I started about... I think since 2011, I started taking photographs at the local mosque.
Okay.
There's a lot that happens at the mosque, not just during the namaz times and so forth. So they have a lot of functions during the course of the year. And what I enjoy doing is photographing there, because there's a lot of raw emotion. And they got used to me, so they don't even see me with the camera anymore. And a lot of times when they see the pictures, it's like, we didn't even realize you were taking the images and so forth. And what I started doing was I started cataloging my work, and then I realized that over that time period, you could see people grow old, you could see children grow up, and even to the extent where you can see when someone passed away.
Mm.
So that for me was something that I never really thought of. It's only, I think, only since COVID where I really made a concerted effort, because I realized that, you know, these memories, once certain people, for example, pass on, then memories and experiences go with them.
Yeah.
So how do we preserve that? And you don't always have people writing down their memories. So for me, it's a case of, if I took a photograph of your grandfather, for example, and you see the image and a conversation starts, and it's, you know, my grandfather said X, Y, Z. So his memories are not there. There's still time to save those experiences and so forth. So for me, that was and still is. I'm still doing it. So it's not like one bucket list shot. It's more that series.
It's a series of photos.
Yeah,
that's peak.
Yeah.
Nice. So let's say if someone is starting photography, going your way, wedding photography is going into these things. What do you give them? Something that will guide them to that path?
Patience.
Perseverance and patience.
And
and
definitely coming out of your comfort zone.
And I think one of the big things as well is we mentioned it at a few of our, in fact, at most of our workshops as well, is there's no place for ego. There's no place for ego in this. If you walk in with an attitude, however much or however creative you are, it just, your ego overshadows all of that. And people would not want to be in your company, let alone work with you. So, you know, it boils down to, again, like we mentioned earlier, it's working with human beings. And we mentioned it last night. Wedding photography is not about, your product is not your image. Your product is how you make your customer feel. If you give them good experience, they will come back to you.
Exactly.
And they will recommend you without even thinking about it. So, you know, it's every wedding photographer in the beginning, it's not easy. It's not easy because you need to put in the legwork and the groundwork. And then once your business starts growing, you basically, like I said, you leave your ego at the door, things start becoming more natural, and then business starts picking up.
And then mentioning the word business, learning about business.
Yeah.
From finances to marketing, learning about business. I think COVID was a turning point for a lot of small businesses who had no idea that you should be separating your deposits from your monthly income.
That was a big issue.
It was a struggle. It was really a struggle. I have to say, alhamdulillah, our clients were amazing. But what helped from our perspective in South Africa, it was in March 2020. I think it was the 14th of March when he made the announcement that it's complete shutdown and no events. And while he's making that announcement, Ramadan was end of April. We still had weddings till the end of March and a little bit into April. As the president was speaking about the shutdown, I put my phone on silent and I turned my phone the other way because I immediately started receiving panic brides and their messages. I left it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I picked up the phone and I called all of my brides who were booked for that March and April, and I just listened to them. And I tell you, when it came like 5 minutes into the conversation, you could actually hear them feel relieved that they were able to vent to someone. Because it's been months of planning to come to this point where this uncertainty just hit them out of the blue. And all that money they've paid towards deposits, now what happens? Are they still guaranteed the services and the venue, etc., later on? When is the industry going to open again? When am I going to get married?
Yeah.
You know, so it was a case of listening first. And I had to become a psychologist, a therapist, and just comfort them. The comforting helped tremendously. A lot of them, I'll say 80% of my clients I saved, in the sense that they kept their deposits. I mean, they made me keep the deposits because they were sure they were going to get married. And there were one or two of them that canceled, but they gave me payment terms because they said, you know what, we know you're a business and you also have your expenses and worries to think about. So take your time and pay us back. So like that was a lot of shukr. I was given, you know, that we had such amazing clients. But that was the biggest lesson when it came to business. That before COVID, I was thinking along the right and safe point part that I need to keep money separately. And learning about business was the best thing. Best thing. And a lot of us, yes, we're creatives. We're not business-minded. So there's nothing wrong to bring on board an accountant or financial planner to advise you about these things. Yes. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the other thing as well I just wanted to emphasize on, is that as creatives, we fill our platter with a lot of things that we think we can handle. And what we don't realize is eventually in time, it starts clouding our creativity.
Yeah.
That's when you suffer with burnout. Right? These are coming from times I've learned myself. I had to let go of certain things. Let go of your editing for a while. So you just create some space in your mind to think, right? I outsourced my editing for a period of time. I outsourced my album for a period of time. my admin, I started sticking to office hours so I can spend time with my kids in the evening. Mm-hmm. So creating that balance is just as important for a startup. Initially, yes, you will be packing your platter a little bit just to build your portfolio and stuff. But it needs to come to a point where you have to strike a balance. Definitely learn to strike a balance just to have a good peace of mind as well.
And I think just to add on to that, if it's a beginner photographer starting his business, one of the big lessons to learn is if you do not take yourself seriously as a business person, your clients are not going to take you seriously.
Yeah.
If you don't set boundaries from the get-go, your clients are going to think you're available 24/7.
Yeah.
So it's about deciding, okay, fine, this is not a hobby anymore. When people pay me, it's a business.
Yeah.
I need to treat it as a business, and I have to look at myself in a different way, because if I don't, my client is not going to.
Thank you very much.
We can go on about that. A lot of experience.
Thank you. We heard a lot. Maybe we see photos of TTL, but I think this is the first time we listen more to Siraz and we listen to Fatma. It's very nice to know you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Would you like to give anything to anyone who's listening to you guys?
Call us back. We'd love to come back.
We want to give a shout out to AAB.
Yeah, definitely.
We'd like to thank them for firstly having us, and also thank them for the amazing experience that we've had here. I mean, it's such an amazing team that they have, and even their store, the concept of their store is it's refreshing to work with a team that has this passion for what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I
feel if a creative walks into the store, they'll be encouraged and inspired immediately.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes we walk in just to annoy them.
Yeah.
We're not buying anything. We're just annoying the guys.
I feel like doing it now.
Yeah, it's like, you know, take my money, guys.
But yeah, exactly.
It's such an encouraging setup. It makes the industry seem much more easier to understand.
Yeah.
You know, and at the same time, workshops. I encourage everybody, no matter what industry you're in, attend a workshop, whether it's related or not, to what you're doing as a profession. It's such a great source of inspiration. You know, you go back so much more refreshed and fulfilled and looking forward to doing your passion. That was one of the biggest lessons we learned as well growing into this profession is attend workshops, irrespective of what the topic is about. Just to listen to the individuals and what they have to say, because we come from different walks of life and we're going to find inspiration somewhere.
There's times where I would rewatch certain videos on YouTube or listen to certain podcasts more than once. And it's because I found that initially when I watched, how did I miss that point that he made? So when I watched the second, it's like, I can't believe I missed that. You know, so it's. I think the environment here they've set up,
definitely,
yes,
right, is it draws you to firstly you walk in and it's a case of I can get everything here, but then secondly you have these stations that they've built as well, which you need to book and that's it. Mm. It encourages you to grow your craft,
to try and
the
test things.
Yes,
we can never know enough.
Yeah.
Yes. You can't know everything. Yes. And this environment they've created here, it's conducive for you to learn and learn and learn. It's absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
for having us. Yeah?
It was pleasant to have you guys with us in the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. يعطيكم العافية ونشوفكم بحلقة ثانية من الـ AAB Podcast.